At California Psychics, we know some people can't read the career warning signs, like your boss still not knowing your name.
You, Tina, Lisa, Sheila, whatever. Get that report to me by lunch, okay?
It's Carrie, ma'am?
Just get it done, Terry.
So talk to California Psychics and receive the career guidance you need. We only connect you with the very best, so guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Call 1-800-PREDICT today and get 20 minutes for just $20.
Welcome to Pod Maverick After Dark Free Agency Edition. I'm Kirk Henderson, joined as always by Josh Bow. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good.
Yeah.
That's all I got. I was going to add more, but that's it.
Well, we're here. It's about 8:40, a few minutes later than I had intended. It is Monday, June 30th, the opening evening of Free Agency. Don't really have a lot to say, and this is going to be kind of fun making pod content out of this, because for a pair of takesmen, I think you and I are a little bit we're just kind of I mean, there's no real excitement. The leading piece of news is the Mavericks signed D'Angelo Russell to a 2-year deal with a player option worth a reported $11.7 million. I think Grant Asseth had that. Mark Stein basically had it 3 or 4 days ago. For some reason, Shams Charania, who just... I got to watch my mouth here because I don't want to say anything offensive, but I don't fucking understand how he's been this off on these kind of numbers for the Mavericks, because he said $13 million. Now, you're probably thinking, why does a $1.3 million difference matter? Well, because if it were more money, it wouldn't be legal, because the Mavericks can't go over, like, I don't think you can willingly go over the second apron. I think it's like something that you get put over based upon your salaries and like increases in things that are built into guys' contracts. And, you know, except it's not really something so it's like the Mavericks signing him for anything that would put them over doesn't actually make sense. It was it's essentially a 1-1. Second year is a player option. This strikes me as a bit of a make good deal for D'Angelo Russell. He's a former number 2 overall pick. He's been in the league a really, like, kind of shockingly long time when you go look at his, like, basketball reference.
Yeah, 10 years.
Which is just like, that's, kind of shocking when you think of it like that. It's just like, man, I've been watching basketball a real long time when I can't remember, you know, when it feels like the guy's just been in the league forever. So yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
It's one of those things where, you know, I'm not a big fan of the player in a vacuum, yeah. But he's getting paid $5.7 million annually. Like,
yeah. For a position of absolute need.
Right. Look at what most rotation NBA players are making under the current salary cap structure. 5.7. It is literally nothing.
Yeah. It's a step above a minimum, to be quite honest.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's honestly, it is pretty low. Now, of course, you know, the devil's advocate would be like, what does it matter how much he's getting paid? If he hurts you on the floor, he hurts you on the floor. It doesn't matter if he's making $20 million or he's making $10 million or he's making $5 million. And I see that there are going to be some moments where Mavs fans are going to want to rip their hair out or, you know, facepalm, because he's going to have an inefficient night. He's going to make a defensive goof in the clutch. That's going to get clipped and highlighted for 24 hours and everyone's going to be pissed off. But at the end of the day, anyone that they would have signed for this amount would have had similar drawbacks, not the same drawbacks, but just having their own set of red flags and flaws, because you do not sign a player for $5.7 million and get a perfect player that fits exactly everything you need and has no, like, there's a reason why these guys are available for this amount of money. Like, let's say they would have signed Chris Paul, or, you know, Tyus Jones just went for $7 million. Could you have negotiated him down? Malcolm Brogdon was a popular name, but it's like, you can go through all these names. They all have their own issues, just like D'Angelo Russell has his own issues. They wouldn't be available if they didn't have issues. And if you're looking at it, to me, Brogdon is like a hilarious suggestion, because it's like you want to sign the injured guy to replace all your injured players.
I'd also, he was with Kidd in Milwaukee. And right. My understanding of it is the two did not get along. Like, Malcolm Brogdon is, by all accounts, like a very intelligent player who is also rather churlish. Who does that sound like?
So it's kind of like they're too similar.
Right. You just can't put two, you know, and that's okay.
I didn't even think about that. I was just thinking, like, you know, how could they rely on this guy while Kyrie's out?
True.
When he's never been reliable his whole career in terms right. of staying on the floor. And then Chris Paul was a popular name, and he's a good table setter, and he would have helped. But, like, they don't necessarily need a table set. Like, they need scoring. Like, someone has to be able to shoot and score buckets from the perimeter, because they literally don't have that until Kyrie Irving comes back, depending on how big of a fan of Brandon like, you are.
Yeah, the shooters on the team are Klay Thompson, now D'Angelo Russell, who's min-max, like, you know, for video game speak. Like, his range of outcomes on three-point shooting, if you go to Basketball Reference, is pretty hilarious. Last year, he shot... Oh, my. Last year, he shot with 28 games with Brooklyn. He shot under 30%. With the Lakers earlier in the year, he had shot 33%, and so that averaged out to 30-32.
And to be fair, that's the worst number by far. Yeah. Before that, he had been regularly near the 40s.
So the question we get to answer and think about the next several months is that because, like, what led to that? What led to that for D'Angelo Russell for last season? Is it a lack of spacing?
Yeah.
And if it's a lack of spacing, that is it. The Mavericks have some interesting challenges. Now, yeah.
I'm willing to write off the Brooklyn stint because okay. that was not a team interested in winning games when he got yeah. there. And you just look at some of the minutes and the lineups that team played. It was pretty ghastly. But he didn't play very well before he got traded with the Lakers, which necessitated him being traded because they needed help. They weren't playing well. I think when they traded him, he was 8. The Lakers were 18-13, and they overall had a minus net rating. Funny enough, they were positive when D'Angelo was on the floor last season, and negative when he was off. But his shooting numbers also weren't very good. But, I mean, he has never had back-to-back seasons below 35%.
No.
Like, he'll go 38, maybe he'll do 34, but then he'll do 39, 39, 40, 41. I would anticipate him bouncing back, but of course he's not gonna have spacing. You know, I don't know how open his shots are going to be, but also when he's right, he's a pretty decent pull-up
mm-hmm.
three-point shooter. So he maybe doesn't need open spot-up looks to be productive, because he has produced while being kind of a self-creator before.
Yep. So in terms of my, like, whinging the past 6 weeks over what do the Mavericks do about playmaking, I think the bottom line is probably the best possible answer for how I would like to see them play. Like, I'm not number one, I hate Chris Paul with, like, a religious fervor. So that's a big thing for me. I know it's not logical.
But also he can't score anymore. Like, they
can't, like, run. Like, right. Like, I'm not interested. The Mavericks are gonna be a 3 yards in a cloud of dust offense. Like, you're writing about it at some point. I'm very interested to see how creative the Mavericks get offensively, but having a dynamic guy off the ball, like, they needed this. They just needed it, because otherwise your options kind of get a little dark, and Brandon Williams and him.
Don't want to put that much on him. I'm looking for
him and Brandon Williams can hold the fort. And that's kind of the goal here. If you're looking for any kind of optimism on,
and if they're not going to make a big trade.
Yes.
So,
So, and yeah, Sports Massacre says signing Nembhard and also D'Lo in the same week is the most hilarious thing. I don't think Nembhard is going to be on the Mavericks in any way other than a two-way. Like, there's just not – like, Nembhard's like 5'11". Like, I'm looking forward to seeing him in Summer League. And I'm, you know, I don't want to hurt, you know, his feelings. I would love to be proven wrong about it. But it's just, it's like smaller guards on this offense. You've got to be able to score the ball. Like, that's where Brandon Williams comes into play. And Nembhard is a great table setter, and his shot is different. Like, his shot is just not – he used to be able to shoot better, and then he changed his shot, and he's just still working through it. Anyways. Yeah, I just, you know – I'm going to get irked in the season because I think we traded Spence. I think we're trading out like a Spencer Dinwiddie-esque kind of performer for a younger Dinwiddie. And that's not, I don't mean that as like an insult. Like, Dinwiddie really held down the fort last year. I kind of hated watching him, but that's not his fault.
Yeah. Like, and Russell stays on the floor for the most part. Yeah. He plays a lot of games. His game log looks kind of weird because, you know, pandemic. You know, you know, no one plays 70 games for like 3 years because of the pandemic. But like last 3 years, 58 last season, and he had an ankle sprain at the end of the year, and Brooklyn was tanking, so they didn't push him to play. And then, but even then, 58. Like, if you look at the Mavericks' injury history, they would probably take 58 games from anyone. Then before that, he was 76, and then the year before that, he was 71. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, not, you know, that's pretty reliable.
So I pulled this number up because I just thought it was interesting just for context. A 10-year veteran. No, so in the Mavericks, you know, like Dinwiddie will be one of those if he happens to come back to the Mavericks, for example. A 10-year veteran in 2025 is owed $3.6 million. So you're getting
barely right above them.
Right above it. And so it's like when you think about it from that perspective, I have to accept it. We've beaten on the front office for how they got into this position, and I think that's fair, but bitching about the specific moves once they're in the bad position, I don't think is fair.
Right. The problem isn't them signing D'Angelo Russell. The mm-hmm. problem is they built a team that's reliant on a Kyrie Irving, mm-hmm. you know, an older team that's hurt. Like that's yeah. not, yeah, that's the problem. And Russell's not going to be able to necessarily solve it. He will help. That's but right. they weren't going to find anyone with $5.7 million that was going to fix what was wrong with the roster.
So T. Lou asks, who else would the Mavs sign for the taxpayer mid-level exception? D'Lo isn't the problem. The fact that we are looking for a guard making $6 million to save the season is. That's correct.
Right.
And I mean, save the season's a little strong. I mean, I get just like when you look at the Mavericks on paper, and I'm including D'Angelo Russell on this. When you look at the Mavericks on paper, if you're a real hooper guy, if you're like a 2K person that maybe doesn't watch a ton outside the Mavericks, you're looking at this team going, tell me why we can't win. Because I actually got a lot of messages to that effect today. It's like, tell me why this team is not, like, why do you not like this team? And I'm just sitting here thinking, man, I like the individual players.
Objectively a lot of talent.
A lot of talent. I mean, two number one overall picks, three number one overall picks, you know, once considering Flag and Kyrie. But it's just the pieces have to fit. And that's where it's just like they're going to be running some big ball lineups. We're seeing lots of different stuff out there about this. And it's – I'm not going to close the door on it. I'm not going to be that harsh, except when goaded on Twitter, I guess. But I'm a little like looking at it kind of cross-eyed going, all right, I guess
I have to see
me, like, I guess you could sell me on it. Cause I think really what we're going to see happen is this kind of team should beat the shit out of the worst teams in the league.
Absolutely.
Like, really punish some of the teams that are underperforming. Like, go ahead.
Yeah. There will be weeks, assuming nothing else major changes. And this is kind of the team they're going with. Mm-hmm. There will be weeks where they look like the greatest team ever. And it's like, wow, they figured it out.
You big saw ball. Vision.
All these other teams are going to be tearing up their rosters to try to get bigger and match what the Mavericks are doing because, you know, they're going to play like, or they're going to play like Orlando and Brooklyn and Memphis, and Portland. Like they're going to play a stretch where they play what, like 7 games, and 6 of them are going to be against teams with records that are at best as them or worse. And they're, like you said, they're gonna kick the dog crap out of them because they're just by default the talent and the depth. Like, as long as they're healthy, mm-hmm. they're just gonna roll over teams in a regular season where there's not a lot of practice time. There's not a lot of scouting. Like, it's gonna be, it doesn't matter what your game, like, there's no game plan. It's just, wow, we have 4 or 5 players that are better than your best 4 or 5 players. Lively and Gafford and PJ and Cooper and AD. Like, that's better than what, you know, every team that missed the playoffs last year, for the most part, better than their top 4 or top 5. So there's going to be stretches where they look like that, but there's also going to be stretches where they play the top 4 in each conference, and they're going to shoot, you know, 31% from 3, and you're going to look at it and be like, what the, like, can this team ever win a game? Like, it's going to be, my prediction is there's going to be really high highs and really low lows, because the roster is just so combustible and so different and so weird that it's going to take time to figure out. But the talent is undeniable, so it's going to look awesome at times. But I think unless Kyrie comes back and looks awesome, like, right away, which you just can't count on, you can't put that kind of expectation right. on him, it's going to look weird. And that's the thing, like, you're talking about, like, I don't know what, you know, I don't know how anyone can feel like how good or bad, like, I'm not comfortable in saying that they're going to be terrible and miss the playoffs if they're healthy. Now, if they're not healthy, and if Kyrie can't come back and look good, and if AD misses 35 games and Lively misses, you know, 30 games, then yeah, you know, if they have somewhat similar injury luck to what they had last season, they're not going to make the playoffs. But if everyone's healthy, I don't feel confident predicting they're going to be awesome or bad, because there's not a precedent here. There's not a lot of data on how these guys can play together. There's not a lot of data on how good a team this big in today's NBA can be.
Yeah.
I don't want to dismiss it, because there's not enough to dismiss it, but there's, on the counterpoint, there's also not enough to say that it's going to work, like, undeniably. So I need to see it. And I think the coaching staff has stuff to figure out. And I don't think that's, like, people think that's like a downer take. Like, I don't think it's negative to say this is a very unique roster. They will need to figure some stuff out. That's not, like, that seems like a fair thing to say about the roster.
Well, and with that, we're going to roll into a short break, and we'll be right back with our man Nathan kind of spoiling my next segment. And I'm shout out to Nathan for this. So we're going to insert some ads on audio, and we will be right back. Thank you so much for sticking with us. If you are listening to our audio stream, somebody reach out and let me know if the ads actually post. Josh told me I forgot to do it the other day. I don't know if you forgot.
Maybe it didn't work.
If it didn't work, I'm curious. So I'll actually do it correctly tonight. Please subscribe to our show here on YouTube. We do regular kind of live shows with fan engagement. Don't know if I'm going to do one this Friday. Oh, it's 4th of July. No, not doing one this Friday. But I will, you know, try to be doing them throughout the summer. Next, the Friday the 10th or the 11th is Summer League. So I'll be out there in Vegas. But, you know, Josh and I are going to be regularly podcasting. We will probably do shows after the first 2 Cooper Flag games and kind of treat them like actual basketball games, because they're going to be interesting. And, you know, just if you haven't paid attention to the show thus far, if you're kind of working your way back in, now would be a good time to subscribe and check back in on things. We'll take a little bit more of a break during the summer, but I have some ideas for content. But, you know, we're just here. We're here making it, rolling along, doing Mavs content. Now, our guy in the chat. So there's just some weirdness going on with LeBron James. Like, it's just so magical that his ability to really commandeer the news cycle. And it's been almost a day. I'm glad we had time to kind of process this. But my understanding of what happened is LeBron James really expected the Lakers to offer him another 1-1 deal with a player option. They politely declined, and so as a result, he opted in to his player option worth $52 million. Did you know that in the 8 previous times he had an opportunity to opt in or opt out of a contract, which that's just so funny to say out loud. This man has had that many chances to opt in or out. That's how long he's been playing. How many times he's opted out before today or before yesterday or today, whenever he opted in?
Hasn't he always opted out?
He has always opted out. That is correct. And that is remarkable because what we have after he opted in, he kind of, his agent, you know,
Rich Paul
sort of lambasted the Lakers, talked about what's doing, what's best for LeBron. Kind of an awkward statement that was like, well, this team sucks, but he opted in. And so that sort of put, you know, everybody that likes working the trade machine and into a tizzy. And there are like a Lakers insider with a good track record, Johan Buha,
used to work for the Athletic.
Johan Buha, who just recently left the Athletic, really well connected guy, really measured guy, said like, just keep an eye on Dallas. Just keep an eye on Dallas. Now, here's the thing. An AD for LeBron trade would tickle me to pieces.
All
right. I don't think it's legally allowed under the cap, but maybe I could be wrong. I also have heard from two places that I trust that if LeBron was to actually leave the Lakers, he would ask the Lakers for a buyout. Because I don't think you can actually trade for LeBron because it guts the team he's going to.
But why would the Lakers do that? They would just be like, no, we want stuff back. We're not just giving you away.
I 100% agree, but that's the power of LeBron James commandeering the market.
But like, what's also funny is the Mavericks can match style. Like, I don't know. I obviously, it's LeBron. You can't really place his value is more than on the court. Like, it's impossible to calculate the, like, what is the true trade value of LeBron James? But the Mavericks can get there and match salary and not completely gut the roster. Like, they'd be trading a lot of players, but it, like, you know, I've seen like you could trade.
Cavs can get there too. It's a little dicey though. It's
dicey for the Cavs because they're second apron, so they would have to like slash salary to get under, and then trade a lot of stuff. Like, couldn't the Mavericks? Well, I guess the Mavericks are second apron now with D'Angelo, I think. So maybe it would be harder for them. But salary wise, it's like Gafford, PJ, Najee, Caleb. And that's, I think that gets you there. Obviously, you know, that's a lot of, you know, Najee, PJ, Gafford. That's a lot in terms of your main rotation. But I mean, you would still be able to start D'Angelo, Clay, Cooper, AD, Lively. And, you know, or no, D'Angelo, Clay, Cooper. Wait, who would you might not even start Clay. It'd be D'Angelo. What, Cooper, LeBron?
Like, just mentioned, like we just have to talk about it. Like, we just have to.
I'm just, they would still have enough that they would still have, like, a pretty formidable, like, top 7 or top 8.
Like, I kind of think that's a better basketball team.
Yeah, it actually clears out your...
Clears out the problem. Like,
yeah.
And I need you guys to understand something. I am on record for years. I can't stand LeBron James. I'm not discrediting his basketball whatsoever. I just can't stand LeBron James, the cultural figure. And you've got to understand just how hilarious it would be if I would have to cover a team with 3 players that I really have a long track record of not liking.
Yes.
Like, it would be incredible.
It would be true. I would feel bad for you, but it's tremendous content.
Now, I mean, the other part would be, and I'm going to go make this meme real quick. Like, Nico would be just unbearable because it's like,
yeah,
he'd
be justified in everything. Right.
You know, that meme of like the, I made this, and then it like hands it off. Like, it's like a weird stick figure hands off the thing that it made to somebody else. The person looks, the other person looks at the thing and goes, you made this. Then the next panel down, the first person has walked away and he goes, I made this.
Yeah. Where
it's kind of Nico. He just like walks it. You know, he's a blessed individual. If something like that were to happen, yeah, I don't know. It is. I don't like engaging in kind of rumor chicanery. I've very rarely done it over the years, but enough people that I value their opinions are like, just don't rule this out entirely, to where we had to sort of bring it up.
I mean, I've been bringing it up since last summer.
Because, yes, like, you look at, it's a joke.
Yeah, I know. But like, you look at it, like, he loves Jason Kidd.
Yeah.
He's on the record with loving Jason Kidd and loved him being a coach with the Lakers. He loves Kyrie. And even if they had a little bit of a breakup there when the Cleveland team fell apart, like, very much real, like, basically told the Lakers to go get Kyrie before the Mavericks got him, by the way. So loves Kyrie. I think he still likes Anthony Davis. Like, he asked for Davis to get traded to LA. They won a title together. I don't know what his opinions are on Nico, but obviously he was at Nike. LeBron is Nike while Nico was there. So obviously there's a relationship there. Rich Paul said that Nico is like an uncle to Bronny. He said that a year ago. So like, everything's there for him here in terms of like the basketball. Now what I just can't believe is I just cannot imagine because this would be his last team. I cannot imagine him retiring in Dallas. Like, it just, his media empire is in LA. You know, you can sell me on Cleveland because he's going back home. You can sell me on New York because it's the only other media market that is comparable to LA in terms of his outside ventures. Just, it would just be so, the basketball part makes sense, but everything else about it, I can't imagine him here to finish his career narratively. It just feels off, but like, everything the Mavericks are doing feels like a team doing stuff thinking that they have a chance to acquire LeBron James. Like, you acquire his favorite teammates, you acquire one of his favorite coaches, your GM is led by someone that worked very closely with him and his family for years. Like,
it's, I mean, real good.
Like, it's right there.
It's just, it's real good, and I don't, it pains me.
And Mark Cuban's not the owner anymore, and I don't know if he likes Mark Cuban, so I don't know if that was a deal breaker before.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
It's actually a really good point.
I mean it's all lining up. But again, the Lakers can just say no thanks.
Yeah.
He opted in. I know he has the power, he's LeBron, but LeBron does this all the time. He doesn't do the opt-in thing. You said he opts out every single time. So that's the weird part, for sure. That's the part that makes you raise your eyebrows. But everything else, he does this every year. He gets very passive-aggressive about the roster and about management. He's done that with LA. He did that with his second Cleveland stint a lot. What was it? The fit-in or fit-out tweet that he sent when they were going through a little losing tiff because he was pissed off at Kevin Love. He's always been like that. So this might be just another one of his things where he bitches about the roster and then, you know, shows up to training camp, like, whatever.
What a riot. All right, there's one more bit of free agency news that's like Mavericks adjacent that we should touch on, and then we'll close out with something else that happened on a different, I guess you'd call it Mavericks adjacent podcast to end last week. But there's a Twitter account, I don't really follow the guy yet, but he's been right enough. His name's like Ari Reports. He was right on a couple of things early about the Mavericks, and it's worth just paying attention to what he has to say. Notes that Olivier Maxence-Prosper, Omax, might not be long with the team. Like, it was vague enough in the tweeting. I don't really have anything to say.
I don't even think you need sources to give that
opinion. Yes and no, but like Omax and Hardy don't, like,
because they need to get under. I think they're going to be right up around the second apron.
We just had somebody post that they're $3 million under right now. Like, expect them to be. Jared Sullivan says Mavs are not a second apron team. Expect them to be about $3 million under the apron after the D'Lo signing. The league salary cap didn't grow by as much as projections, which could be a problem. It only went up by 7%, not 10%. Which I think actually will affect certain elements, but I don't necessarily feel like doing the math right now to care. I don't know, just the Omax and yeah, it's so funny. I remember on draft night, Omax was the guy that I was like, oh, that's interesting. He looks like a guy who could contribute now just because of his skill set, and Lively's going to be the one that takes time.
And he was a three-year college player, a little bit older, coming out in the league, 21 years old, coming in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, now it's, you know, he just hasn't done anything. Now he hasn't had a ton of opportunities, but, you know, that's so goes it for the late first-round picks. You're usually being drafted by better teams. You kind of have to make the most with what you can. And, I mean, it makes sense, like, you know, Omax, Hardy, those guys at the end of the roster that are making just enough that could get in the way of them wanting to do stuff down the road. So I would have to imagine that's what it's
about. I mean, they're still paying JaVale McGee. Like, there's some elements of their cap where it's just like, I don't know. It's not fair.
It's
like,
not as bad as it could be, but it's not.
No, it's not like it was early in the mid-teens when it's like they're paying Gal Meckel for like 4 years. It's like, God, what are you guys doing? And you know, I don't know. Trying to think. Brain's all frazzled after today. So kind of the last piece of news, then we'll get on out of here, is former vice president of content for the Dallas Mavericks, Mike Marshall, who I would say within the framework of social media kind of loudly quit his job a couple weeks ago. Loudly is a strong term. He did it on social and was like, anybody that knew him, and like, you know him, I don't think he's ever spoken to me. That's whatever. This is like, it had been something we'd been hearing, like the Mavericks just internally were kind of losing people left and right, or firing people left, right. Just a big messy situation. Anyways, he went on the Dumb Zone, Jake Kemp, Dan's Pot, like really all over, wonderfully,
you guys.
Yeah, really.
For people highly listening that don't live here. Yeah.
It's a podcast that from two guys that were local talk radio that transitioned to podcasts. And I can't really emphasize enough how fucking hard that is. And they like managed to, anyways, they do a nice job on this show, and they brought Mike in, and Mike talked for about an hour. We have a piece up on it at Mavs Moneyball if you want to go read it. But he essentially paints a picture of a team of people that have come in and been hired. And they're not, like, this is one thing where it's like, Nico's not necessarily responsible. Like, Nico's basketball side stuff, but like business ops and the business side of things.
Ownership
stuff. He paints a picture of a group of people that were not aware of what was entailed. It's like just really kind of hapless stuff. Also including, and I don't know how this was the case, but he makes a strong case for it, that he said that the management team didn't seem to understand that there would be a gap year between Bally Sports going under and Amazon. And so that they would basically have to cover the revenue gap, like they would be losing money. And as a result of that, it just made everything kind of worse. And like, that's fucking embarrassing.
Yeah, especially how much these owners are worth. Like, they're literally some of the richest people on the planet. Like, getting, like, you know, we talk about Steve Ballmer money and how much that makes a difference for the non-cap stuff for the Clippers, like their arena, their support staff, like all the stuff that doesn't have a salary cap in the NBA.
That's right.
The Adelsons absolutely have that amount of money to spend on the Mavs, but it sounds like they were not prepared to do so. And also, it goes to show that a sports team, like, this is not just something that's happened to the Mavs. Like, a lot of private equity, a lot of finance, a lot of people from non-sports world are buying sports teams. Like, it used to be, it is kind of funny how, like, you know, in the 70s, 80s, 90s, like, these pro teams were kind of millionaire mom and pop organizations in a way. Now you've got all the, you know, these people coming in from the outside that aren't used to the industry, and it's, you do not run a sports team like you run an investment fund or a private equity firm or whatever. So it's just there's some learning curve there, and there's some hard realities that these people are finding out about.
Well, and Cuban said some things. I think my friend Najee the Knife, I can't remember whatever his Twitter handle is talking to us in the chat. But just know we talked. We talked about D'Lo earlier in the show, so we were on to something else here, but you can circle back and listen, and we can talk about it later if you want. But essentially, Cuban, when he went on his, you know, I wasn't part of the Luka trade podcast tour, which he has conveniently since now memory hold that fucking thing. Whatever, Cuban's different. But he mentioned how much money he lost yearly on the Mavs. I actually believe him. But the challenge of and why this becomes frustrating is like you make your money on the sale. So if Mark was almost the sole majority owner and he sold his he sold the majority share, let's just say it's 66%. It's probably what it is for the 3. Whatever billion. Okay. He paid $280 million, I think, for the team in 1999, 2000, something like that. I could be getting the facts wrong. Somebody will probably check me.
Yeah. He made it all back and then
some. That, yes. Yeah. Like, there's no, like, we don't really care that you lost money because you eventually, if you were broke enough to need to sell, and I don't think he was broke enough, but it's like, if you needed the money and decided to sell the team,
you
made everything you lost back.
And all times whatever.
Like, again, that's why it's like Mark Cuban, anyways, and that goes with all teams. So it's like hearing that these guys were very cheap on the front end and basically didn't give team the way he phrased it was like they promised they had to be told that team employee bonuses were normal for the playoffs and then promised it and then didn't pay them out. And like that's fuck, if anybody's watched Christmas Vacation from it's like the Mavs offer a Jelly of the Month club, like what the fuck.
Well, and especially it was the finals 2024 finals run, which is literally the longest, like, that's, you know, quote unquote overtime an NBA team employee can put in. Like, that's, it's not like they played four, they got swept in the first round and that was it. Like, we're talking, they were working when the regular season is supposed to end in mid-April and they're working till almost the end of June. And then you know, there's no break. They got to go right into the draft and NBA teams and media, their media teams and their social teams, they basically didn't have an off period until August. Mm-hmm. If you think about the people that work on the business side, and I don't even know what happens then. Maybe there's, I don't know.
It's just as tough because I think we have to assume quite reasonably that the Mavericks are part of the Adelson portfolio, the Sands Corp. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. And like, I don't know if it's right. Like, it's accurate to call this what's happening cheap, but I don't know if it's fair in that if you're operating a business, you look for means. Like the basic goal of a business is to make more money than you spend. Yes. Like, that's what it is. The problem is professional sports teams are much more akin to public utilities than they are regular businesses. You can make money off of it. It is just exceedingly difficult. And Cuban, with some of the bets that he took over the years, left the Mavericks in a position where they weren't able to leverage their team rights, or I'm sorry, their broadcast rights in a way that made any money. You know, like they signed all these deals. They weren't able to leverage streaming in a correct way. And so, you know, the team might have been losing money, and it seemed like when he sold the team, he was giving the impression that coming up with the cash to operate the team was very difficult. So now they no longer have that problem. Like, the Mavericks flat out no longer have that problem. There is cash with which the team can operate, only the extravagant spending days in Cuban's era, and it did seem like he went out of his way to take care of people. Like, that's done. It's done.
Yeah.
And that is not a Nico thing, but Nico did devalue the team by trading Luka. So like there's a lot of shit at play here and it's really uncomfortable.
Yep.
And it shouldn't be stuff we have to care about, but we kind of got to talk about it in context when you get a guy like Flag coming in. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really funny how this works because for years we were like, this organization is so stagnant under Cuban and they need new regime changes and leadership. And they did that. And they make the finals, so we're all like, see, we told you. Like, they just needed to shake up their org and their leadership. And then this is kind of the unintended consequences of that. And we don't always see all of it. You know, two sides of a team. There's the business side and the basketball side, and you know, it's more complicated than sometimes, you know, I make it out to be, or when we talk about it. And yeah, that interview just kind of highlighted there's obviously some dysfunction going on, and it's a bummer.
What's particularly fascinating to me, though, in a morbid way, is this is just so different than the recent team acquisitions, where you have the guy who came in and bought the Suns and spent so much money for failure. Whereas the Mavericks, they get these new owners that come in and essentially cheap out while staring success in the face. Like, that shit is crazy.
And also, the Suns failed, but also he, you know, I think he pioneered the, you know, he was one of the first to redo the TV stuff. And he made watching Suns games easier in the Phoenix area. And that rollout was pretty well received. I think, you know, he did the stuff like, I don't know if it was him or if it was the Utah owner, which is another similar situation.
Yes.
Where they lowered like the concession prices to like actually be like, so that stuff, you know, the Suns and the Jazz might not have the on-court success, but it seems like in terms of the other stuff, they've been putting their money into that, you know, spending money on that part of it, but hasn't led to wins, but you know, the hot dogs are cheaper.
Yeah. Well, all this sucks because,
yeah, you know, I don't like talking about this part of it.
No, I hope everything works out on the up and up for the existing Mavs employees. I hope Mike Marshall has a place to go where he can feel appreciated.
I think he is working. Let's spill the beans. He's going to be doing something with D Magazine. That is his next stop.
My favorite D Magazine. My who funds it? There was an old joke on Twitter several years ago in conservative Twitter. Who funds the Federalist? This website that no one could figure out who has their backing. Who funds D Magazine? They pay you. You're a D Magazine employee.
Technically.
Good for Mike, man. That's this is all so silly. But you know, content wise, I expect us to maybe take a little bit of a week off, or if there's like actual any movement on the minimum signings. But I don't know if you guys remember this. That stuff can take forever. Like, yep. It can really get drawn out, and guys need to look for deals. Like, it seems like Exum is an opportunity for the Mavericks. Interestingly enough, like, I've not heard Spencer Dinwiddie's name at all. Maybe he kind of played himself out of the place. I don't know. This is a tough one. We'll answer this question from the knife here in the chat. He says, my question for you is this. Is this the deepest Mavs roster you've seen since 2011?
Last season's roster pre-Luka trade was the deepest roster I'd seen since.
It was deep and it was balanced.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Like, this is a very talented team that is very imbalanced.
Yes. That's the perfect way to put it.
Now, like you mentioned earlier in the show, we're going to get to see, like, what if all reds? Like, this is my favorite. Nobody gets it because half the people listening to our show aren't old enough to watch
that movie. It really bums me out how old that movie is now.
Yeah,
because I in my brain that movie came out like 10 years ago, and it's like, no, it didn't. It came out.
It's old.
25 years
old movie. Yeah. He asks with Flag now and deal. I mean, Flag is a forward. Just because he has ball handling skills doesn't make him not a forward. D'Lo helps alleviate the pressure. We talked about that a little bit earlier in the show. He helps alleviate stuff, but it's gonna be challenged. Ocean's 11, guys, go watch the film. And there's a card scene within the first 15 minutes of the movie, and it just kills me. All right, you got any 4th of July plans?
Survive. That's about. I don't probably go. We live really close to a water park, like within walking distance. We'll probably mosey on over there at some point. But otherwise,
nothing tires out children like water parks.
Yo, we've got a season pass. It's
the flip side
60%
is
60% of the time it works every time.
The flip side is nothing tires me out like a water park. Like that shit is tired. I mean, maybe your daughter's reached the age now, but I was falling around our little lineman of an 18 month old, and he's just like running around the way, and I'm just like, this, I can't do this. This is, I'm so, yeah. My hips are so sore this morning.
No, it gets me. She's old enough. They've got like a 10-year-old, like it's like, yeah, a playground for like, not for little kids, but for non-adults. And we let her run around there. There's by herself. But you know, there's rides she wants to go on with me, and man, water slide, like, you know, roller coasters, you're seated. Like water slides are, I don't know, there's something more physically demanding about a water slide than like a roller coaster.
Well, we're big people.
Yeah.
And the damage it can do to your hips if you like shift the wrong way is real.
Yes.
I will say I'm grossly looking forward to the Jurassic Park movie. Like it's just gonna be so bad. I can't wait.
So is Megan. She loves dinosaurs. So
just, but see, you telling me that makes me upset because she won't watch Andor for me, but she will watch Jurassic Park. She's a woman of principle.
She likes dinosaurs more than she likes Star Wars. I don't know.
Fair enough. Fair enough. What a great, this is fantastic podcasting. Okay, guys, expect us back next week, but you never know. Maybe we'll pop on with something fun.
Yeah. Just be ready. You know, when we need to do our LeBron emergency podcast, we'll be here.
I mean, we should secretly be rooting for this because
you kidding me?
bring on the LeBron stands. If we thought Kyrie weirdos exist, you know, and all Luka fans, I think LeBron stands and are all encompassed.
If the Mavericks trade or acquire LeBron, Nico will be like Michael Scott in The Office when he's talking about his vasectomies and his vasectomy reversals. And he's doing the snip, snap, snip, snap. That would be Nico with our Mavericks livelihood over the last 12 months.
It'd be perfect. Yeah, all right, everyone. Kirk and Josh, thank you so much for hanging out with Pod Maverick. We'll be back at some point. Enjoy your 4th of July holiday. If you're here in the United States, everybody be safe, hydrate, and put on sunscreen, and go Mavs.